There's a lot of pressure, as you can imagine. People sometimes joke that CBO just has, one big computer model and they can tweak the assumptions and have the results come out. It's actually a lot more complicated than that. There are a whole lot of different models and approaches that CBO uses based on the particular issue they're being asked about. And a lot of these estimates they have to do are very time-consuming. As you say, many people are beating on them simultaneously to get stuff done quickly. So there's a lot of pressure, but I think they do a very professional job.
Now, sometimes the projections get criticized by different parts of the media for not taking into account the fact that changing one variable changes a lot of other variables and that they're static projections. Is that true?
No, for the most part, it's not true. That CBO tries to take account of behavioral changes whenever they can. For example, they recognize that if the level of subsidies were being changed, for example, for a public program, that would change the number of people that would decide it was worth their while to apply for benefits. The one big exception has to do with the economic assumptions, and by rules that the Congress itself has established, that CBO takes the overall economic assumptions as fixed, and that actually is for the best, since it would be all but impossible to try to figure out how any single piece of legislation was going to change the economy anyway.
Let's get into semantics, if we could, for just a minute. Some people call it cuts. Some people call it slower growth. Is there a definition? Are they interchangeable? How does that work?
That's a good question. Of course, in the real world, the spending for programs is being driven by the cost of the services that are being produced or provided, and by the number of people that are eligible in the case of mandatory programs like Social Security and Medicare, so that over the years the benchmark for comparing cuts has been the so-called budget baseline, and again that's defined in law, and from that's generally the best benchmark for comparison. I mean, for example, as in the coming years, as more members of the baby boom generation retire and become eligible for Social Security, they're going to be driving up projected spending in Social Security. So that if you want to, whatever you call it, slow the rate of growth of benefits, cut benefits, unless you're actually going to prevent some of those seniors from claiming, you have to reduce the amount of the benefit to which each one is going to be entitled. Some people think there's a difference, but I think whether you call it slowing the rate of growth or a cut, it's essentially the same thing.
We are speaking with Paul Vandewater, senior fellow at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities and former staff member of the Congressional Budget Office. And getting to the issue of the current budget cuts that were included in the deal that was reached for 2011, that $38 billion is really not exactly a real number. It doesn't seem like the federal government is going to spend precisely $38 billion next year than it has this year. Can you give us some light on what's really going on?
Yeah, well, your federal listeners who are expert in the budget process will immediately recognize that, in large part, this is a technical issue distinguishing between budget authority and budget outlays. Budget authority, as the name indicates, is the authority which is provided in an appropriations bill for an agency to spend money. The outlay is the effect on actual spending whenever that may occur. And in large part what's happening is that since these cuts are being made during the second half of fiscal year 2011, a lot of the reduction in actual spending won't occur until 2012. That doesn't mean that there's not going to be any reduction in spending, but just a lot of it's not going to happen right away. This is all being layered on top of what would have happened otherwise, but the reduction in budget authority is still, it's still less than would otherwise have been the case.
Talk to us a bit about the future of the Deficit Reduction Commission plan. Is it finished as a comprehensive plan? Does it have still some life left in it?
The Deficit Reduction Commission's plan, it actually was the plan proposed by the co-chairs Erskine Bowles and Alan Simpson, because it didn't get the requisite supermajority vote to be a recommendation of the full commission. But the that proposal, I think, is still having an effect on the way the current discussion of the deficit is going. President Obama just last week made reference to it as providing guidance for his plan and for future discussions. And we understand that the so-called Gang of Six in the Senate, which actually includes four senators who had been on the Bowles-Simpson Commission, are using that plan in many ways as a framework for their proposals. I don't think anyone ever expected that the Bowles-Simpson proposals were going to be adopted in toto, but I think they're having a surprising degree of life as a basis for what's going to come next.
So, having looked at this for so many years, including those 18 years in the CBO, are you confident that some kind of equilibrium will return to the budget process anytime soon, that we can have some at least reliability over what to argue about?
I'm afraid not. I mean, my view is that we're going to continue in this with these budget battles, for quite some time. I think the issue is they're just growing differences in views about what the federal government should be spending money on, that things that used to be agreed upon are not widely agreed upon anymore, and that's going to make the situation a continuing struggle for quite some time.
And any advice for federal managers who have to manage through all of this?
Well, I think federal managers have gotten, recognize that they have to get used to uncertainty, and I think they should count on uncertainty continuing for at least a little bit longer.